Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. I'm your host, Shanna Fold, and I'm here to get you caught up quickly. Today, we have some top news stories from the week, followed by an interview to get deeper into things with our political analyst, Binyamin Moalem. Then we'll round out the episode with a Torah thought from Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York. Now, let's get to the news. The story of the week is that the United States struck around 90 Iranian military targets along Iran's coastline Wednesday, one day after hitting another 80 targets, including more than 60 Revolutionary Guard boats. CENTCOM says the strikes came after Iran violated the ceasefire by attacking three commercial ships in the Strait of Hormuz. Iran responded Thursday by firing missiles at Jordan, Kuwait, Bahrain, and Qatar, which are all countries that host American military forces and bases. This is a major threat to the MOU, or Memorandum of Understanding, between the United States and Iran. To get a deeper dive, join us with our political analyst, Binyamin Moalem, a little later in the show after our news briefs. The Knesset passed controversial legislation on Monday to set up a politically appointed committee to investigate the failures of October 7th. The vote was a unanimous 59-0. However, the number is misleading since the opposition boycotted it altogether. The committee will be made up of 6 members and a chairman, with the coalition and opposition each choosing 3. But if the opposition declines to name its picks, the committee can move ahead with just the coalition's 3. Opposition lawmakers stayed away from the vote out of protest, insisting that an independent state commission of inquiry should be established instead, which is a demand that Prime Minister Netanyahu has outright rejected. The October Council, which is an anti-government group, accused the Knesset of using legislation to rid itself of responsibility for the October 7th atrocities. Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas is calling for parliamentary elections, which would be the first vote in more than 20 years. Abbas has led the Palestinian Authority since 2005, when he was elected to a 4-year term. He's been in power for more than 21 years without another presidential election, and his new decree is not even exactly calling for one. There's also serious doubt that this vote will actually happen. There have been calls for votes in the past that never materialized, including when Abbas called for elections in 2021, but canceled them when it became clear that the Fatah party, which is his party, was losing ground and grip on power. He suggested that this was Israel's fault, and he said that Israel was making it hard for Palestinians to get to the voting booths. Well, analysts say that this is really an effort to show the United States, Europe, and Arab countries that the Palestinian Authority is willing to have a reform after years of corruption. The elections are set to take place in 2027 and would include Palestinians from East Jerusalem, the West Bank, you might call it Judea and Samaria, and Gaza. This is actually the first time that all 3 Palestinian groups from all different sections of the region would come together for a vote. So we'll keep our eyes open to see if that happens. Hamas announced on July 6th that it is prepared to dissolve its governing institutions in Gaza and transfer administrative authority to the National Committee for the Administration of Gaza, which is a U.S. and U.N.-backed technocratic body based out of Cairo. The announcement, made at a press conference by Hamas's media chief, came as part of compliance with the October 2025 ceasefire framework, which they said they'd be removing themselves from power, but the exact timing and mechanics of this handover are unclear, with major disagreements still unresolved when it comes to Israeli troop withdrawal and the second phase of that agreement. Israel's foreign minister, Gideon Sa'ar, says that this move is a trick, arguing that Hamas surrendering administrative control while keeping its weapons would still leave the group as a dominant force behind the scenes. Hamas has said in the past they don't want to be an administrative body and that they think that the UN and UNRWA and other organizations should be taking care of the people, while they're taking care of, you know, what they consider to be security by having their weapons. And so we're going to see how important this becomes and if the international community believes that Hamas is fulfilling its part of the ceasefire by getting rid of their administrative body. Now let's get a deeper dive on U.S.-Iran fighting and relations. What's going on with the MOU? Is it still in effect? And what is this going to mean for Israel? Let's bring in our political consultant, Binyamin Moalem. Welcome to the Israel Daily News Podcast. Binyamin Moalem, our political analyst, you're here with us today. We had some news that shook up Israel, shook up the United States, when on Monday evening there were reports, you can share more with us about this, about the Iranians hitting ships in the Strait of Hormuz. And then by Tuesday, the United States was already responding. This is quite a big deal because everybody who's interested and invested in this war and in the ongoing Middle East understands that there was supposed to be peace and quiet in the Middle East. There was a memorandum of understanding signed with a timeline of another memorandum that is supposed to be signed. So tell us what happened here and what are the ramifications of this? Is peace still possible?
Well, we'll see. I think most people, especially in Israel, were skeptical about this from the get-go. But here's where we stand. On Monday, the Iranians fired at three ships in the Strait of Hormuz. This is Monday night going into Tuesday. The Iran basically has decided that the Strait of Hormuz is its own. It has possession of the Strait of Hormuz. Ships traversing it need to obtain permission and coordinate their passage with the IRGC, something that the U.S. rejects. Now, Iran is saying that they are not going to charge tolls in the Strait of Hormuz until after the 60-day ceasefire lapses, which is August 21st. The U.S. says there is no tolls, none of this is ever going to happen. But until now, the U.S. had appeared to be tolerating Iran's statements because it's saying Iran is speaking to its own people behind closed doors in negotiations. We'll get them to come down. In any event, Iran had been demanding that these ships coordinate their passage with Iran. Now, meanwhile, over the past few weeks, the U.S. has been opening shipping lanes in the southern portion of the Strait of Hormuz, closer to Omani waters or in Omani waters, basically allowing ships to go back and forth without having to deal with Iran at all. Now, Iran doesn't like this because from Iran's perspective, this takes away, diminishes their leverage, right? All their leverage going into these discussions really was their stranglehold on the Strait of Hormuz that leads to higher oil prices if ships cannot freely cross the Strait of Hormuz. And Iran was hoping at some point to start making money off of this. And so the U.S. says no, and now we're going to help Oman, you know, create shipping lanes for these ships to come out. So Iran doesn't really have this leverage anymore. So Iran is starting to fire at ships that do not abide by its rules for the Strait of Hormuz, and that is upsetting the United States. So Tuesday night, in response to those attacks on the ships in the Strait of Hormuz, and what's interesting, one of those ships was a Qatari ship, one of them was a Saudi ship. Again, these are ships, these are countries that were attacked by Iran during the war, but now they're trying to smooth things over with the Iranian regime. Iran wants to smooth things over with them. Qatar and Saudi Arabia both sent delegations to the ongoing funeral for the Supreme Leader Ayatollah Khamenei, who's being buried today. So a lot of interesting dynamic. That's a separate issue. So
today being Thursday?
Today being Thursday, yes. So the U.S. launched 80 strikes on Iranian targets, including radar installations, air defense systems, weapons caches, and some 60 small boats belonging to the IRGC, which it would use to kind of police the Strait of Hormuz. In response, early Wednesday, Iran launched attacks on U.S. bases in Bahrain and Kuwait and continued threatening ships in the Strait of Hormuz. So the U.S. last night launched attacks on 90 targets on Iran, a more expansive attack on Iranian targets, military targets, including one of the more significant, not necessarily military targets, was a bridge. Now, this bridge is important because it is the land bridge between Iran that connects Iran to Russia and China in Central Asia. And this bridge had been used a lot more lately since during the closure of the Strait of Hormuz by the United States, which prevented Iran from using the Strait of Hormuz to import or export goods. They were using this land bridge to import and export goods from Russia, from China, and from Central Asia. So the U.S. now has bombed that bridge. Iran is saying that it can rebuild it relatively quickly. I don't know to what extent that's true, but that was a significant strike. In response to the U.S. strike, Iran now fired at U.S. bases, not only in Bahrain and Kuwait, but also 10 missiles were launched at a U.S. base in Jordan. And another thing that's very interesting here is important to note that on Tuesday, when right before the U.S. launched its first round of attacks on Iran, President Trump suspended the sanctions waiver that he had issued for Iran in accordance with the MOU. Right, there are sanctions on Iran, a lot of sanctions, and under the terms of the MOU, Iran would now be allowed to sell its oil on the open market, in the global market, meaning whereas before they could never sell their oil to anybody, the only ones who were buying it was China, and China would get it at a discounted rate because they were the only ones willing to buy their oil. Iran was now able to sell their oil in the global market. This was good for Iran because obviously they can sell at higher prices to more customers, whereas for the United States, the idea is, here, let's flood the global market with oil so that if the war does restart, oil prices will be lower. And indeed, oil prices did go down. When President Trump did, in response to Iran's attacks on ships in the Strait of Hormuz, he lifted that sanctions waiver, meaning he reimposed sanctions on Iranian oil, which now prohibits Iran from selling oil on the global markets. Iran is very upset about that. They said this violates the MOU. In any event, we are kind of like in this situation here where where do we move forward? Another thing that President Trump said when asked at the NATO summit on Wednesday, this would have been yesterday, what does he think is happening with the MOU? And President Trump said, from my perspective, the MOU is over, meaning that Iran is done. He didn't say we're going back to war. The U.S. doesn't appear to have any real appetite to go out back to full-fledged war, at least not at this point. But President Trump did leave the door open for negotiations when he later on qualified a statement that the MOU is over by saying if the negotiators want to continue talking, they can. Meanwhile, in Israel, everyone's on high alert. The IDF planes are loaded with missiles in the event that the order is given to go attack. The target bank in Iran has been updated with new intelligence for targets. But again, there is no order to go back to war. Israel is just on high alert given the developments in Iran.
Thank you for taking us through that. Certainly the Israelis are talking about this. I did hear some Americans in the United States talking about this, but I know that this is a top of mind for Israelis. And I know that we don't really know how this is going to affect Israel, but is there anything that you can share with us about what the Israeli people can expect moving forward? And one other question I have for you is, do you think that that MOU was ever a good faith MOU? Was it ever going to work out when it was first written up? What was it, 45 days ago at this point?
No, less. I think it's only been three and a half weeks.
Not even 1 month.
The waiver went into effect on June 21st, which was after it was signed. So it has not even been a month yet.
Wow.
Look, I think from the Israeli perspective, there was a lot of head scratching. It's always seemed that the red line of the United States was far away from the red line of Iran, and that there was no way for them to meet unless one of them decided to really go against what they had stated up until now. And there was almost no possibility of them ever reaching a deal unless somebody really folded in the negotiation, at least one of the sides. Obviously, the fear for Israel would be that the United States would have folded. But so far, we haven't seen that. Prime Minister Netanyahu, probably in a more of a diplomatic gesture, said he's okay with President Trump giving talks a chance. As of now, again, we haven't gone back to full-fledged war. You asked what the chances we go back to war. That's a good question. I don't have an answer. What I do know is that it doesn't seem that the U.S. wants to go back to full-fledged war. What you might see happen in the U.S. is reimposing a closure on the Strait of Hormuz and basically telling Iran, you guys can't come in or out anymore, and then increasing the pressure on Iran. Again, Iran was under a lot of economic pressure, not just during the war, but even after the war because of the blockade. And it might take some time to get back to that point because Iran has had a few weeks now to export oil. But the question then becomes, does Iran then decide to launch attacks on Israel? And if it does do that, then Israel will undoubtedly respond.
The MOU was supposed to have a 2 month period before going into the next signing for the next deal.
Correct. That would expire on August 21st.
On August 21st. Wow. So it has, we're not even halfway there. Thank you for joining us,
You're
Binyamin.
welcome. Thank you, Sean.
And now for a Torah thought by Rabbi Yossi Madvig of Oswego, New York.
This week is a double portion. It's Matot and Maaseh, which are usually read together. And this is the second of the 3 weeks of consolation, or of rebuke, I mean, where we're leading up to the destruction of the temple of Tisha B'Av, which we'll talk about another week. Last week, we actually read the Haftorah for Matot, for the first of this week's parshas, because of it being the 3 weeks. But I wanted to bring out that connection with Pinchas and Eliyahu, so I'll double up this week on both Matot and Maaseh. And the opening of Matot deals with laws of Nedarim, of vows and oaths, emphasizing that the words you speak should be sacred, should be kept, and have serious weight. And the Haftorah contrasts this by rebuking the people for corrupt speech, forsaking God, spreading falsehood, and so on. And Maaseh recounts the 42 journeys and encampments that the Israelites went through in the desert. And in the Haftorah, this journey is evoked, famously calling God's affection for the people when they were faithful, when they faithfully followed him in the desert. And it serves as a reminder of how far the people had fallen from that initial faithful desert devotion. So Matot means staves. It's meant to mean tribes, which is symbolized by the staff. And a mata means like a strong, stiff branch, which represents a state where the people feel separated from their roots, right? Like when they're wandering in exile, they don't have that overt divine support. So the mata symbolizes an inner fortitude, a resilience, and a hardened strength that's required to survive independently. But in the Haftorah, Jeremiah sees a blossoming almond branch, which, you know, symbolizes the idea of freshness, vitality, a living branch. It's not hard and rigid, but it's soft and flexible. And we have to have both. We have to be both unwavering and independent, as well as be able to go with the flow and deal with life's challenges. And as the Haftorah for Maaseh concludes, if we repent of our ungodly behavior, then you can return to God and the nations will be blessed and praised through Israel in truth, justice, and righteousness.
All right. Well, that is it for today's show. Today is Thursday, July 9th, 2026. Tel Aviv has a low of 24 degrees Celsius and a high of 27 degrees. That's 75 degrees Fahrenheit for the low, going up to 81 degrees for the high. We are everywhere. Don't forget to sign up to our Israel Weekly News Wrap. The Israel Weekly News Wrap is a newsletter with the top five stories coming out of Israel from throughout the week, and of course, with a personal note from me at the top. You can sign up for that at israeldailynews.org. Scroll down to the bottom, drop your email address in. And on our website, you can also sponsor our show by going to the website and clicking on sponsor or contribute. Thank you for supporting independent journalism. A big thank you goes out to our incredible sponsor, Marianne Vollinger, our writer, Perry Schwartz, and our associate producer, Lori May, as well as our interns, Alex, Leah, and Hannah. Have a great and productive day and an excellent weekend. Shabbat Shalom, everyone.